Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This is the Runner's World Podcast.
You're listening to the Runner's World Podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
This week, we're speaking with Lisa Jackson about the joy of last place.
I mean, what I want from running in the long term is a sense of connection. The thing that I found so exciting about running was that I gave myself permission to do it. I didn't have to pass a test to do it. If you really think you are too overweight to start, just start walking. Just walk until you feel comfortable walking 5K and then start literally a few seconds of running at a time.
Rick, have you ever finished last?
Oh, I have. Have I ever finished last? No, I don't think I have, actually.
I have.
Have you? Tell us more.
Sports day.
Yeah.
I was always in charge of the throwing things.
Oh, okay. Right.
Like in terms of like selection of stuff like javelin, shot put, those sorts of things. Yeah. Everyone's just like, give it to Ben, he'll throw it. It's not a bad thing to be known for. But at one point, there seemed to be this error in judgment by everyone who just went, you can do the 800 metres. Now,
you can throw things, therefore you'll be a good middle distance runner.
I think someone had said that I'm not doing it or I'm ill or something. Right. So they were like, the only person left was me. So I did the 800 metres and I was a very last because I didn't do any running. This was back when I was like, 13 or something like that. Right. And I was very unsporting apart from throwing things. And yeah, that was literally like, everyone had finished, had turned round, was watching.
Yeah.
As I came round the bend for the final like 100 metres.
How did it feel? And did it put you off running for a bit or not?
Oh, I think I was already put off running. Right, this probably just cemented it for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that was not really, I think that's because it's embarrassing in front of your peers.
Yes.
The running itself, I think if the effort of running around a track or like this was just painted lines on a field.
Yeah.
I think that was probably still like, if I think about, oh, that's still the same feeling of being like, oh, you know, you're running hard and it's a race and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But the negative comes from the fact that you've just got the whole school going, this guy is rubbish.
Yeah. I was thinking about, I've definitely finished in the bottom 25% in cross country when I was at school, same thing. And it didn't detract for me actually on the enjoyment about it because I just thought it was about getting round.
And it's
kind of like, it was about kind of, try not to walk, get round, and you're covered in mud anyway. And it was sort of, so it'd be interesting to see what Lisa has to say about runners who aren't bothered about pace and time. Because I think actually it can really add to sort of your longevity of the sport as well, can't it? Because if you're like, well, I just love running. It's not about a performance thing for me.
Yeah, I think everyone will get to a point where if you want to continue doing your running, you have to let go of whatever it is that has driven you from a time / a goal perspective.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Hey, funny story that's been doing the rounds.
Yes.
So Tokyo 2020, as styled itself, is going to be the most eco-friendly competition in history, it says. And as part of this, it's designed beds in the athlete village to be made from cardboard.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, it's just good, isn't it? To be applauded. But Australian basketball player Andrew Bogut, if that's how you pronounce his name, shared some concerns that the beds might not be able to survive in the event that two Olympians were to have sex in the bed.
Oh, well, this is, you know, rumours of extracurricular activities during the Olympics has always been pretty strong, hasn't it?
For sure. So he aired his worries online, and the manufacturer, Airweave, confirmed that the cardboard bed would take up to 200 kilograms. So more than enough for two people, they said.
I guess it depends on who's sharing a bed with whom.
Yeah, I guess if it was sort of two shot putters or throwing people like yourself.
It's true. If two throwers got together.
It could be, yeah, but it's quite funny anyway. So, yeah, that's doing the rounds anyway about, don't worry, athletes, the beds are hard-wearing enough.
Great stuff. All right, I think we should speak to our guest.
Sounds good.
Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone.
Our guest this week is Runner's World's latest columnist, Lisa Jackson. Lisa, who is now writing the Flamingo Diaries for the magazine, is a runner who celebrates going slowly. She's finished last in 25 marathons, but says there is joy to be had in forgetting about time goals and simply running for its own sake. Lisa, welcome to the Runner's World podcast.
Thank you so much. Lovely to be here.
No, it's great to have you on. You didn't start running until you were 30.
That's right.
So why did you start?
Well, I had a very fit father and a fit mother. And when you have that example in your house, day in, day out, they didn't just talk the talk, they ran the run. You see the benefits of running firsthand, the mental benefits, the physical benefits. My father could still fit into his school blazer, and wow, he still can today. And he's still running at 80, even after arterial heart fibrillation.
Wow.
So you see that example, and when you try and stay away from running, you see the effects, and they're not good ones. So when I turned 30, I think a lot of people have that, like, you know, sort of revelatory moment when they think, what am I doing with the rest of my life? And I knew that I had to get fit, and running was the thing I hated least. That's all I can say. I didn't like it. I actually just hated it least. And so I hired a personal trainer, and I also entered a Race for Life, a 5K Race for Life. And when I attended that, the atmosphere was so different to what I expected. I expected it to be super competitive. And actually, everyone was in pink, which is my favorite color. And also, everyone was encouraging everyone else. And I got such a buzz from this joy and this camaraderie that kind of set me on the path to running lots and lots of marathons.
Yeah. When you first started, did you have that sort of natural inclination, I think, that when everyone begins is that they want to see how fast they can go and how far and all those sorts of things? Because you champion running slowly, but was there a starting point when you went, I'm going to go for this as fast as I can, 5K or anything like that?
No. You know what? Honestly, when you're as slow as I am, then there's no point in trying to do that. And right. I know I was slow because before you get the idea from other people that you're non-athletic or people tell you bad things about yourself and your abilities, I was at primary school and we used to have to run from the teacher to the wall at the swimming pool and back. And I would be doing my best, like honestly running flat out. And by the time I touched the wall and looked back, everyone else was back with the teacher munching on their peanut butter and fish paste sandwiches. And I was still starting to come back.
Right.
So I am just super slow. And I mean, everyone I've taken out as a beginner runner has said, oh my God, I'm so slow. I'm so embarrassed to be running with you. And I always just go, no, I promise you, I've never met anyone who's slower than me. And to this day, I genuinely haven't. So no, there's no point in me trying to be fast because that just wasn't going to happen. That said, when I had to qualify for the Comrades Ultra Marathon, which at that time, you had to do it in under 5 hours as a qualifier, I got fast. Okay, I got a lot faster. But the grueling nature of the training, the speed sessions, the endless squats and lunges, all that stuff, that's not what I enjoy about running. So I was able to get much faster. I mean, I've got a PB of 4:38, which is, you know, pretty okay, but it wasn't my kind of style of running at all. And I really don't think if I was still, you know, well, if I ever had to chase times again, I'd just stop enjoying running and then I'd probably stop running.
I think we've discussed this a lot previously and how people can lose sight of the fun in running because they chase these times. And that's very interesting that you say that you've done that, but it's absolutely not what you want from running in the long term.
No, that's absolutely true. I mean, what I want from running in the long term is a sense of connection, because there's no other activity that gives you the opportunity to just turn up somewhere and you can just talk to anyone. I mean, I always say this, I don't approach people first. I always let people come to me because I'm aware that some people want to focus and they've got a time goal or whatever. But I wear a fancy dress for every marathon or a funny hat. People always come speak to me. And then I just hear these incredible stories of the hurdles people have overcome, the challenges they face in their lives. People share stuff with you. I mean, I'm a hypnotherapist and I'm quite surprised sometimes I hear just the same stories when I'm on a marathon as I do in my therapy room.
Yeah.
And I just love that. I just love the fact that I've made friends, you know, in loads of different countries. People have touched my life. They've inspired me. I think the main thing is, as I'm getting older, is running with 80-year-old marathon runners and going, my God, if that guy can do it, what's wrong with you? Yeah, you're slowing down even more, but you've got to get out that door and carry on, you know, achieving goals. So that's what I love, is the connection.
Let's talk about coming last in a marathon.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people, that would be a kind of one of the fears, would be I won't finish or I'll come last. And you're someone who's come last a lot and you still love running, right?
Yeah.
So what was your experience coming last?
Well, I did it by accident the first time. Now I sometimes do it deliberately. Like if you and I were running together, unlikely as that is, and we were coming to the finish line, I would ask you to go ahead of me so okay, I could be right, last, right? But I did it accidentally the first time. And I just got so much... you know, praise and cheers. I mean, the whole place came to a halt. Anyone who was still left, all the people tidying up, all the marshals and that, just stopped and just gave me the standing ovation. And a little secret is they often give you extra goodie bags as well. So you might have got home with six goodie bags, which is quite nice. And I just felt that that was like kind of the last fear that I had about running was like, it's not humiliating at all. Someone has to come last. I mean, that is the fact. There is a winner and a not a loser, because it's not a loser. You finished it. And there's a person who comes last. And I actually just love it. I mean, honestly, and now I just fight to get that last place. And there's a lovely little story of I said somewhere that on social media that I'd come last 25 times. And a runner called Tire Girl challenged me on social media and said that she disputed my figure. And she could show me, you know, photographic evidence that she'd come last in a race that I'd counted among mine. And she sent me the screenshot and she was right. So I had to downgrade my 25 to 24. Right. But then I came last again. So I'm back up to my
Okay, good. Yeah,
right.
Great.
But I said to her, who knew that coming last could be so competitive?
Yeah.
But in, I often do this about cycling and running, but there's a thing in the Lanton Rouge in cycling, which is the sort of the last... The red light, this is the sort of like the last position. And it's like,
I didn't know that.
In like the Tour de France, you kind of, it's a celebrated position because, you know, after 3 weeks of riding over the mountains, just getting through it, like with all these things, there's going to be a thing. And there's, you know, the last place is a celebrated thing.
Well, you know what? I might have to buy myself a Lanton Rouge to stick on my head as a funny hat.
There you go.
Because I love that idea. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
You say, Lisa, that a lot of people have written to you and said that you've given them a kind of permission slip in some way to run slowly or to enjoy running. How do you feel about that?
Do you know, I just think it's the most wonderful thing, because the thing that I found so exciting about running was that I gave myself permission to do it. Mm. I didn't have to pass a test to do it. No one had to rate me and say if I was good enough or not. And obviously, if I had to pass that test, I wouldn't have passed it. And just to be able to enter as many damn marathons as I liked, do them as slowly as I liked, as long as I could, you know, beat the cutoff, is a wonderful thing. And I just want to pass that on to people, is don't wait for people to give you permission to do anything you want to do in life. You know, whether that's write a novel, whether that's have children, whether that's, you know, achieve any dream you have. I just think that is the most powerful thing that running taught me, is give yourself the permission slip. You know, you are the captain of your own ship.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
I think you mentioned a fancy dress.
Mm.
And why the fancy dress and what, when did it start?
It started right from the window.
Right.
I ran my first half marathon dressed as the Angel of the North, because that was the Great North Run. So I completely embedded myself with glitter, head to toe. I wore a little, you know, furry halo and wings. I love fairy wings, by the way. That's another thing that I love. And that was such fun. And I try and dress up, you know, if it's race appropriate, say, for example, the Loch Ness Marathon. I didn't actually have a special hat for that, so I was going to wear my flamingo hat. And then I found in a gift shop a marathon monster, you know, like a huge monster hat, Loch Ness monster hat. I cannot tell you that just huge amount of joy. I was dancing around in this gift shop going, I found it. This is just perfect. So I actually find that like choosing the costumes, it's all part of, you know, I kind of call it marathon foreplay. Like I just love it. When that parcel arrives through the door and I'm prancing around in front of the mirror, like, you know, looking at myself from all sides, and I think it looks great. It's just wonderful. I mean, there have been some disasters. You know, I wore one that was a flamingo hat and it was tied under my chin and I looked like a Teletubby. So I couldn't wear that one again, because I do like to kind of look nice at the same time. But the main thing with this fancy dress, I mean, is the fact that it's an icebreaker. So other people come and talk to me. And, you know, I want to be the kind of runner that respects other people. So I don't inflict myself on anyone. But if someone's come over and spoken to me and asked me questions, I feel I can ask them a few back.
So some of these stories appear in your latest book, Your Pace or Mine. Can you tell us a little bit about that book and why you wanted to write it in the first place?
Well, I just had, you know, at that time, I think about 18 years worth of running stories that I'd heard on the road. And I didn't feel my story was particularly exceptional, because I know a lot of people. I mean, I know someone who's 70 years old who started running then, and like by the time he's 74, done 100 marathons. But I did think that it would give people permission again to relate to someone who wasn't particularly good at running, but it still, you know, had used running to enormously enrich her life and actually help her to achieve goals and things like that. So I wanted to showcase that story, but also the runners I met along the way, because they had such phenomenal stories. And I just thought people need to know these things. They don't get written down often enough. And it was obviously an excuse to keep in touch with those people as well. And the book is just, you know, it has had a huge response from people just going, thank you, thank you, thank you. Thanks to that book, I'm running my first half marathon or my first marathon or even taken up running because a friend like gave it to me and I don't run, but now I want to. And I just think that's what was missing in the running scene, was just actually like telling people how much fun there is at the back. Like, it's not some grim, dreary place, you know, where people are crying and dragging their like knuckles on the ground, you know, with like horrible chafes and stuff, which is, some of it's a bit true. But we always make friends at the back. There's always some kind of party going on there. You know, we pick up people, we drop off people, we let them go ahead of us when we've kind of given them a bit of encouragement. You know, so many people that I've picked up in races have gone on to, you know, wipe the floor with me in terms of time. And I always go, thanks a lot, you know. But it's such an adventure, and I just wanted to share that with people, that it isn't just, you know, obviously we see fast runners and they're fantastic, but they are very, very focused and they have to be. And I just want to tell people, you know, if that's not your style, you don't have to be like that. You can be, there's something else out
yeah,
there.
It's great. Yeah, running's a very broad church, isn't it? In that
it is,
I think. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
Of all the races, do you have a favorite that you've done?
I have to say the Comrades Ultra Marathon, because, you know, for me, that was so significant. As I'm South African, it's the most iconic race in South Africa. And I mean, for me to even dare to dream that I could do it just seemed 100% unlikely. But I kind of knew I had a few things in my favor. One of them was my mother's immense mental stamina. And I kind of knew if I stood on the start line, if I got there, because you have to run, I think, I can't remember now, like 1,000 kilometers or something in training. If I stood at the start line, I kind of knew I'd finish in a way. I mean, obviously, you know, injuries, notwithstanding. And so for me to have to get faster, it was a huge challenge. I didn't enjoy it, but I did it. You know, my sister always says, I hate it, but I ate it. And then to actually have the experience of meeting someone who's still a very dear friend of mine now at halfway, because I vowed not to talk for the whole thing, because my father told me it's a serious race, not a carnival procession type thing. So you're not going to wear fancy dress, or you shouldn't, and you shouldn't talk. So I thought, no, forget the fancy dress thing. I can do that quite easily without it affecting my performance. But I was not going to talk. And I didn't talk for 6 hours. I was so bored. I was so depressed. I thought this race is totally overrated. I had 3 pairs of socks on because I made the mistake of just taking every piece of advice I got from anyone all at the same time and then doing it all untried. So I had these blisters between my feet after, you know, the first 100 meters. And then I met this Canadian woman, and boy, that little swinging blonde ponytail, started talking to her. And the next minute, it was her first one as well. She just got me through. I mean, I wasn't running anymore. I was just having like a party. So that was my most spectacular achievement in my life, I think.
Well, and also you've just joined the Runners World team. You're our latest correspondent, the Flamingo Diaries.
Yeah.
What are you hoping to communicate with this column?
Well, you know, when I started out running, I hardly knew anyone who ran. I couldn't believe it when I found out Runners World actually existed. I really didn't. Even though I worked in magazines, someone told me there's a magazine. I was like, what, a whole magazine just for runners? It was such an exciting thing. I used to read every word, every advert, every flyer. Honestly, I was like a complete like super stalker for Runners World. And there was this column, John Bingham's column, the Penguin Chronicles. And he was a slow runner, and he'd been overweight and a smoker, and he became a runner, and he ran at the back, and he told the stories of the people he met. Honestly, I used to save it till last, and I would invariably cry reading this, and then I'd read it about 4 times again, and then I'd cry again. So I loved his column, and when it came to an end, I just felt like so bereft. And I wrote to him and I said, you know, one of my biggest life's ambitions in running was to run with you one day, and I haven't achieved that, and I still haven't. So I saw this gap in the magazine, and it wasn't filled for quite a long time. And then someone wrote in the letters page and said, hey, you know, you write about great achievements in running, and that's great, but what about us? What about us strugglers and shufflers and stragglers? You know, maybe you should cover that too. And I was just, I didn't have time. It was one of those days that I was doing 25 different things. But I just rushed from the bathroom, which is where I read my Runner's World, because that's the only time I have to read. And I raced to my computer, and I just thought, I'm writing to the magazine, and I'm saying to them, I'd really like to write for you. And that's what I want to do with that column, is be the John Bingham for people, because he gave me so much encouragement. oh, and just like heartwarming stuff that was in there. So I want to showcase the people I'm going to continue to meet. I want to just encourage people, you know, and just say you don't have to be good at this to enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, it's great. The feedback we've had so far has been great. Actually, someone wrote in and said they were a fan of the Penguin Chronicles, and this was a nice kind of second chapter to that. So it sounds like you were achieving that already. So that's
that's very, very gratifying. Yeah. It's very, very big shoes to fill. Penguin shoes.
Penguin shoes. Yeah,
penguin shoes.
Now, I don't know if this is in your new book or not, but you have raced two races completely naked.
Yes, that is in my book. I only did it for the book. That's not really my thing. Like generally, you'll be relieved to know.
Is it a liberating experience?
Do you know? I think that is the thing that scared me most. That scared me more than doing Comrades. I honestly couldn't sleep the whole night before. The weird thing is, like being around other naked people. Obviously, you've still got shoes and socks on, but being around other naked people in the beginning is just it is excruciating. But that lasts for about a minute or 2 minutes, and then all of a sudden it's just the new normal. And honestly, you don't even think about it, and you don't, I mean, like, I'm not trying to see what shoes you're wearing right now, you know. It's the same thing there. You don't like try and like look at people in that way, like you talk to them like a normal person, like with eye contact and smiling rather than like looking at them, and they do the same for you. And the funny thing I found about it was what struck me most was how friendly naturists are. They're just super friendly, like everyone talks to you, everyone. So I did find it uncomfortable because I forgot. I was so panic-stricken before I did my first one that I didn't put Vaseline between my thighs. And you don't realize what a job your tights do for you.
Right.
So I was sanded raw. It looked like I'd run with a cheese grater between my thighs the whole way. But I soon got used to it. And I wasn't scared when I did my second one, which was in London Zoo. I wasn't scared at all. And in fact, I was like confident. I was walking around with my little space blanket on, and this man came up to me, and he obviously just met this woman he fancied. And he said to me, would you mind taking a photo? And I'm very bad with technology. So I got his mobile phone and I said, does this thing need a flash? And he looked at the woman and he said, yeah, go on then. And he just dropped his, both of them dropped their space blanket and were completely naked. I was like, right, okay, let me take your photo.
Finally, Lisa, what was your message to would-be runners out there who might feel like they're too old, unfit or slow to start running?
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Oh, I think, honestly, again, just give yourself permission. I mean, no one's too old, because I know people who started from scratch, you know, at 70 and did 100 marathons. Hey, Malcolm. You never, you know, honestly, unless your doctor says to you, and in which case, you know, if you really think you are too overweight to start, just start walking. Just walk until you feel comfortable walking 5K, and then start literally a few seconds of running at a time. So my first book, Running Made Easy, that was all about running for 60 seconds at a time, and then interspersing it with walk breaks. So that way really works. It minimizes your injuries and you make progress really, really quickly.
Lisa, thanks so much for coming on the Runner's World podcast. It was great to speak to you.
Well, wonderful to be here. Thank you both.
Thanks a lot.
Great.
Thank you.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Well, that was excellent to hear from Lisa.
Yeah, no, it was great, yeah.
Makes you feel joyful about running.
Agreed.
But I think I'd like to hear, and to continue the joy, continue the celebration of those lesser performances as people might have viewed them originally. Now to change them into those joyful experiences. I want to hear from the listeners about their coming last or near last and why it was, you know, informative to their running.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah.
So email, please, podcast@runnersworld.co.uk. Let us know if you came last and what it meant to you.
His fingers on the button, his ears to the ground. He's done a bit of Googling and he's had a nose around.
He's a detective wearing running shoes. Kerry McCarthy and his weekly running news.
Cantankerous Kerry.
Was that a harmony or just that?
That was a screech.
Yeah.
Anyway, new jingle.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. Yeah. Are you cantankerous this week, Kerry? Or is there a different adjective that you'd like to give yourself?
It has to rhyme, so we're going to be stuck.
Yeah. It's got to begin with a kind of cur.
With a cur.
Yeah.
Where are you going with that one?
Cutting edge, Kerry. No?
Actually, yes, because we're talking about tech. Ooh,
okay, here we go. Okay.
It's cutting edge, Kerry.
Lovely. Hello.
Tell us about your being cutting edge, Kerry. What's going on?
Well, it's not me being cutting edge. It's shoe brand Asics being cutting edge, actually. They're launching later on this year. If you're an Asics fan, they're launching a new concept shoe with smart tech in it. If you don't know what smart tech means, it's essentially taking some of the tech that you have in your GPS watch, say, and sticking it in the shoe.
Okay.
Right.
So with regards to what it will do, it was shown off last week at the big consumer electronics show in Las Vegas, which takes place once a year. And they showcased this chip inside the new EvoRide trainer, which is coming out next month. But I should stress it's not actually going to be in that shoe. They haven't created it yet. So they just needed a convenient vehicle to show off the technology. They were a little bit tight-lipped on actually what metrics it's going to offer. But we have got an idea since Asics has partnered with a Tokyo-based company called No New Folk Studio, which is a firm that makes sensors, basically. And they've previously created their own running shoe, actually, called the Orf Track. And Asics are using a version of this, I believe, in their test. So the Orf Track is basically about sorting out your form. So it monitors foot strike, pronation or overpronation, ground contact time with the balance between your left and right feet, stride length and cadence. And it measures those metrics for every step you'll run and then gives you feedback results based on its analysis, tells you what you can do to get better, which, you know, it is hoped will make you possibly less injury prone if you have a particularly unusual gait, and possibly even improve your performance. So Asics are not the first brand to do this, as we know. I think Under Armour and Altra have both had a go. A few other brands too.
There's Orion footbeds, aren't there? You can get those.
You can get the insoles that do this kind of stuff as well. You can get sensors that you can clip onto the outside of a shoe around the heel area. So it's a lovely idea. But I would say personally, I think probably collectively, we've yet to come across a brand that's really nailed it in terms of accuracy and consistency. So we'll see how it goes. It's a big deal for Asics to go techie because, you know, Japanese companies are traditionally, well, quite traditional in their approach. So this is kind of a bold new direction for them. And I like the idea of it, but I've always wondered how much of this thing is going to get a significant uptake from the running population at large. And now, maybe this is because it's uppermost in my mind, because we're going to press at the moment on the March issue of the magazine, which is our green issue, and it's going to come out at the end of this month. And there's a big feature in there about brands working to make their shoes more eco-friendly. Mm. So putting further non-biodegradable elements in the shoe is not really going to help the same, which I know is not the goal, but it's something to consider.
Yeah. Can I ask a sort of, as a kind of resident Luddite, I guess, of the podcast, lots of stuff that chip can do, right? So cadence, foot strike. Mm. You can get that from most fancy watches, right? So why, what, where's the need for these smart shoes?
That is not a Luddite question, and unfortunately, I don't have an answer to it.
Yeah.
If they were able to say something along the lines of putting the tech lower to the ground makes it X percent more accurate, then you could say, okay, well, this is a direction to go in. But as far as I'm aware, that no brand has made such claims. Yeah, so it's almost coming into the realms of doing it for the sake of it, but I might be completely wrong.
So you can say like cadence, right? Mm. So it's either normally measured by you know, like motion sensors, right? So it's normally, if it's in a watch, it's the arm swing. If it's a chest strap, it's the vertical oscillation.
Okay, yeah.
So that's going to be your key, like, thing. So I guess if you've got the chip is measuring actual, like, impact or, you know, probably still some same
if it
metrics.
Was measuring force, or there is apparently rumour that there's going to be a power meter built into this as well, then that would kind of make sense. But
but that's cadence. That's just foot strike. So that's cool. Like, but you can get like a little anything. You can count your footsteps. Like, that's not that's not groundbreaking.
There's no reason enough.
I'm with you on this. I feel like putting extra tech in shoes themselves isn't going to be that groundbreaking.
But you know, but actually, do you know where it might help is in cost. You know, we all know how, incidentally, another plug for the March issue, there was a big GPS watch feature coming up in that. So if you're splashing out in your marathon training, take a look at that. But we know those things are very expensive. So if there's a way that we don't know how much this shoe is going to cost, but if Under Armour have done it in the past where the shoe's been like 180 quid and for that you're getting tech and the shoe.
Yeah.
There's a cost saving there.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So I guess ASICS will have some sort of supportive app.
There'll be a connective app with, you know, Bluetooth, all the rest of it. Yeah. It'll give you metrics afterwards, just like Garmin Connect or whatever.
All right. Cool. Hey, well, then we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, we will see. And secondly, not a piece of news, but after thoroughly enjoying myself, just having a bit of a sort of waffle last week, I thought I would repeat the trick this time. And I want to talk about, damn it, how runners and pedestrians should interact when both are out and about. How do you let pedestrians know you're coming, whether you're approaching from the rear or from the front, but they're so absorbed in their phone that they don't notice you?
Yeah.
Is there a kind of a general etiquette? And I feel this is particularly important for Brits who are, you know, extremely polite.
So as a buggy pusher and user, I would say that I'm in the minority of buggy users who is considerate about space on the pavement.
Right.
And this is pre-baby and now post-baby, and it irks me more post-baby how little people move their buggies out of the way. And I'm not talking like, I know that there is a child in the buggy, which, you know, but no runner is aiming to do that child harm. Mm. So just be a bit more conscientious. Don't be in the middle. Like, that's my one piece. Just if it wasn't a buggy and you were just walking in the middle and someone was coming towards you, you would hopefully move.
You're not automatically in the right because you're pushing a child.
Well, that's kind of what I'm... Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah, fair enough. So that's my first thing. And that actually comes into... So Jane, who you all know, who listened, that she co-hosts and comes on and talks about stuff, she was running yesterday and had to dodge a buggy, but then came a cropper on a discarded Christmas tree.
Did she video any of this?
No, unfortunately not. But so when we discussed that this was going to be talked about, she was like, talk about the tree and the buggy and stuff. So
it's a tricky one. But do you think there's a general rule of thumb? I mean, you could say, well, the runners should be the ones to move because they're more nimble, but then they're also travelling at high speed. Yeah. Like, if it's a narrow pavement, should it be, right, pedestrian moves or runner moves?
Mm.
Or is it just kind of like play it by ear? But it's something that kind of bugs me. The amount of times people look at you or they hear you coming from behind and they turn around and look at you and then don't just carry on walking through abreast.
Yeah.
It's odd. I was actually, in kind of like fulminating about this earlier, I remembered that about 5 years ago, I was pitched an item called the Run Bell.
Okay. Oh, brilliant.
Which an American guy living in Tokyo had created, because obviously Tokyo is vastly more populous than London. And I turned it down at the time for featuring it in the magazine because I felt that if this thing were let loose on the streets of England, there would be, you know, mass civil disorder.
Yeah.
But it is as it sounds. It's basically a little thing that fits over your knuckles, almost like kind of like nunchucks. And then it's got a bell that you flick like a bicycle bell with your thumb. And in Tokyo, people are running around, or were apparently running around flicking these things, and people go, oh, that's somebody coming up running. I better move out of the way.
Wow.
Which I thought it's kind of a bit impersonal and rude, really, isn't it? If you're kind of like pompously running up, ringing your bell behind someone,
pompous,
that'd be like, get lost, mate, I'm not moving.
I'm all for like just announcing that you're coming, but with a pleasantry and like a, you know, or whatever.
Like, just coming through on your right or something?
Yeah, something like that. But then if that's met with like I'm not moving for you, kind of like hostility because they're protective over their space on the pavement, I feel that's something that I've experienced. Like, well, I'm walking here and you shouldn't run past me. It's a bit like, wow, look, I'm just, it's walking but faster. Just, it's the same thing, man. Yeah. We're just getting somewhere. Like, please calm down.
I think that the pavement is largely for pedestrians. That's how I run. Well, that's true. Yeah.
We're perambulating at a quicker speed.
Compared to walkers on most pavements. I kind of think, I'll do the dodging.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'll always move. Yeah. I just think that when the space becomes precious,
yeah,
in terms of like what's available, I feel like that there is a sense of...
It's common sense, really, basically. I mean, I don't expect, 89-year-old Gladys on her way to the bingo to do a commando roll into the bushes for you.
No,
but
no one should.
Equally, well, some people should. But, equally, if you're quite clearly, you're going on along at an absolute lick, or you're clearly very tired or something, or people are just strung out, there's five of them across the pavement, then it should be them. But, I mean, this is, maybe I'm just, being... grumpy again.
I think you've made me more grumpy about it.
No, I think it's interesting. I remember,
yes.
I remember walking in a very popular part, very sort of pedestrian tourist part of town, and one fairly known running crew were going through, and they're seemingly kind of racing, actually. It was that kind of pace, really going for it. Mm. And there wasn't a lot of movement, actually. There wasn't a lot of acknowledgement of pedestrian, because I was a pedestrian in that situation. I was like, well, this is potentially actually a little bit...
that's a numbers game.
...intimidating.
I think, though. That's like pack mentality. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I would say I'm not like 100% of the time on the side of the runner in this. I think equally, I've been pedestrian plenty of times, and you move aside to let somebody run past, and they just, it's like you don't even exist. They just run past with their headphones on, don't even look at you.
Yeah,
there's
right.
a responsibility on the part of the runner, definitely. But someone moves to say thank you. We can't be the only ones who are kind of, upset about this or have an opinion on it. If you've absolutely lost your temper with somebody, or this is a thing for you, then do let us know at podcast@runnersworld.co.uk.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. A big thanks to our guest, Lisa Jackson, and to you, of course, for listening.
The Runner's World podcast was recorded at Number 8 Studios in Soho and is available on Acast, iTunes and all your favourite podcast apps. If you've enjoyed the episode, please give us a review and we will see you again next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.